Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello again. Welcome to another edition of Spin the Rally Pod. I'm Lisa O'Sullivan, your host and rally fan, here to keep former motorsport team boss George Donaldson, Dirtfish's voice of rally Colin Clark, and our esteemed wordsmith, Dirtfish senior staff writer David Evans, in order. But I have to start this edition with a massive confession. When we recorded this, for no good reason, I decided to bore on about the morning stroke day that I had had. It was really dull, even by our standards. So I've decided to spare you all that agony, and we'll rejoin about 5 minutes in when we started getting to the good stuff. Camembert. Stilton.
I don't do Stilton much these days. My wife used to like it, but she went milk protein allergy-ish, so she can't have cheese.
I suspect we are establishing a record getting so far into the podcast without talking about rallying.
But anyway, my point about my day, which what did involve a trip to the supermarket as well, is that I really need to talk about what's happening in the world of rallying. Apart from the fact, the one really good thing about the day is the sun's come out, it's beautiful blue skies, and it reminded me of those lovely kind of snow-filled, if you're going skiing kind of days. White clouds that are almost difficult to look at because the sun's shining on them so brightly, and the sky that colour blue when it's really cold, even though it wasn't really cold. And I thought, oh, the Arctic Rally is going to be incredible.
Awesome, yeah, is the word. Not underused in this case. There we are.
But it might not quite be like that, Lise. You know, I was there. I was fortunate to be there a week before last. And it was exactly as you've just described. It was beautiful, clear blue skies. Sun was out. That amazing sort of light that you get in that part of the world at this time of year. Do you know, they're forecasting some more snow, though, for next week, so we could see a little bit of cloud during the course of the rally. That could be really quite interesting.
Not for Sebastian Ogier, it couldn't.
It's a disaster for him. It's a total disaster if it comes down.
Because
are we interested in the forecast for Rovanini for the next?
Take me back to the past. Give me your George Donaldson weather update.
Snowing today, not very much. Partially sunshine. Same tomorrow. It's minus 23, minus 15 today, minus 16, minus 12 tomorrow. Saturday, minus 20, minus 14. Again, a little bit more snow on Saturday, but only 1.1.
Is this Celsius?
It's Finland. Sunday, minus 18, minus 16. Tiny little bit of snow. A little bit more snow on Monday, minus 20, minus 16. Tuesday, much the same temperature again. A little bit of snow, a little bit more snow on Wednesday. We're looking at probably 1.8 millimetre of rainfall. That equates to about 25 to 30 millimetres of snow, depending on what type of snow it is. Friday, Saturday and Sunday week are looking gorgeous. Minus 8, minus 4, minus 10, minus 5.
That's
and Sunday,
mild.
Minus 3, minus 9. It's not mild to the point of melting, but at least you won't actually die of cold, Colin. This is important to all our listeners.
It is important. It's really important, particularly for me. But
it's a little bit frustrating for me, Col, just to jump in there, because you told me I had to buy some new boots, and I've just bought some
new
boots.
Did you buy them?
Yes, and it cost a fortune, and it's clearly not going to be cold.
David, have you tried them on, David?
Not yet.
Them on, because they need a little bit of wearing in, because they're very tight across the toes to start off with.
Well, I'm not going
to
wear them around the house, am I?
Advice for you.
David, the point is that the ground you're standing on is not the air temperature, so the ground will be
point,
the lower chilly end of that. It'll be down about minus 20, the ground you're standing on.
That's a very good point.
It was good advice then, George, for David to buy new boots.
It was great advice, Colin. I hope he bought them from somewhere suitably cheap and horrible, because your advice in terms of snow boots has got to be like $8.99 from a 24-hour shop.
You'd be proud of me. I actually went and spent some money. I went and spent some money on a proper pair of snow boots that were £100. I mean, that's probably actually quite cheap by snow boot standards, but for me, it was a wrench. I thought long and hard about it.
Yeah. Did you buy them in Finland or did you buy them in...
No, I bought them before I went last time. And I have to say, you know, Heikki, our cameraman, and myself, we stood out stage side for 5 days in, never mind minus 20, it was minus 28 for the last two mornings that we were out there.
That is starting to get deadly, isn't it?
It is starting to get deadly. And I did dig a snow hole a couple of times just to keep the wind off me. But the one thing that really never bothered me was my feet. My feet were absolutely toasty the whole time I was out there. So, David, don't worry about it. Your feet will be good.
That's the first thing that I was taught in journalism, was to make sure that you've got a decent pair of comfortable, warm shoes and something to keep your head warm, because you're going to be standing outside waiting a lot. And it is the one thing that I never skimp on, is a decent pair of warm Gore-Tex lined, hopefully, soles. Preferably, should I say, soles. Because cold feet... And you're rotten. You're misery to be around.
Cole, do you have cold feet quite a lot, Cole?
All the time, David.
That's because you're always wearing sandals, aren't you?
These Gore-Tex linings, I've never had anything Gore-Tex lined that didn't leak like a sieve, including boots. I just stay away from anything. It says Gore-Tex on it, walk away. They're too hot and they leak. Rubbish.
Well, I've never had a problem with mine.
In my experience, I mean, maybe I've not bought the most expensive one.
So, I buy Timberland, a nice Timberland, love it.
So we've now insulted America and Gore-Tex. We're doing quite well.
But Gore-Tex, was that not a Scottish?
That was a Scottish development, wasn't it? So we've only Glasgow insulted company. Scotland. Yeah. Glasgow company, yeah, yeah, there Glasgow you go. Company. I thought it was Livingston, really? There you go.
Yeah. Livingston, I think.
Right, back. Shall we move on?
So not good for Sebastian Ogier if it snows.
No, but I think crucially, George, the point is there, isn't it? If they recce Wednesday, Thursday, you know, they really kind of need no snow at all from the time that they recce that long first stage to the time they start it, because if they get a lot of snow after they've recced it, then they have to plough it. It can make a small change to the notes, can it?
It can. If it's a small, a 7 day forecast. I mean, its accuracy is pretty ballpark, shall we say? But let's just say that we're going to get 30 or 40 millimetres of snow, and it's seven knot breeze, so there's going to be drifts. It'll drift up to a foot deep here and there, you know, so a foot, 300, 400 mil here and there. It can do across corners and things and across the the ruts that the cars have made from the recce. So I'm thinking, okay, the organiser sends the plough through. Everybody gets informed, but we're not talking major changes in the road. That level of snow, the plough's going to go through and very accurately do his damnedest to stay on the route. He'll just be ploughing the route. So I don't think, I am hopeful and I'm determined that the first car on the road, Sebastian Ogier, my absolute hero, will not be, and I really hope this is the case, will not be handicapped by being first.
He's stuffed, George. I'm telling you, he's stuffed.
Tell us about that first stage then. It's a long first stage.
It is a long, but it's only going to do it once, Cole. You know, at the end of the day, he does it once and then the whole field's been through and then he's into it a second time, it can be worse.
There's a couple of things there that are worth picking up on. George mentions the snowplow and the snowplow trying to keep to the contours of the road. That will happen because we've got really, really good snowbanks on most of the stages. So the snowplow won't have much of a choice other than to stick between the lines. So that's not so much going to be an issue. But the big issue is the type of surface we've got here. It is not thick, thick ice. What happens in Sweden is you get early winter time, you get the snow.
The ice is nicer to drive on than the snow.
The ice is better to drive on, but we don't have that. We've got, you know, really... It's compacted, but it's relatively loose snow because these roads are not massively used. Some of them are. The ones in the military area might be a little bit more compacted. So that might help Ogier. But I genuinely think that, you know, whether it snows or not, Ogier has got one heck of a challenge on his hands. What might save him? What might save him? Here's a question. David, what might save him? Very quickly, I'm going to tell you, but you give me your guess. What might save Ogier on the first day, stroke night?
The first stage, I can tell you, Colt, from talking to Kai Taakiainen, is that the first stage is a very fast one. It's the stage which is most similar to Evascular. So on that,
that's not going to save him. That
can,
is not going
but
to save
can,
him.
But it can, of Wait. Course it can, because if you've got well, less junctions, do. You've got less limited areas of braking and acceleration. So you're going
to
lose...
something bigger. There's something bigger that we have to consider. George, you're a man who's been to the Arctic to his rally. What might save him?
The snow dust.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. The snow dust... in the past has been a massive issue.
Thank you for letting me make my input, Snowdust.
It has been a massive issue, and whether or not it'll be enough of a compensation, the fact that Ogier on both runs will have clear vision, whether that is going to compensate for the fact that there's no question he will be effectively cleaning, ploughing, I don't know. George, you're the man that's driven up there. Is it going to make that much of a difference?
The snow dust certainly can. And the snow dust can hang there even before the first car. -8, -4, so let's say Friday morning is going to be... Is it the first stage on Friday? Or is it Thursday?
Friday afternoon.
Friday afternoon. So, yeah, we're talking only 4 degrees. That might be warm enough to allow some of the moisture to leak back out, absorb into the atmosphere. Whether that makes it worse or better, I'm absolutely not sure. The technicalities of it, I don't know. But you won't get that crystalline stuff so much in the air, which is the one that really can hang and build. So I'm not sure. Yeah. It is actually saying a wee breeze here.
That would help.
It's saying 7 knots. So, that's a light breeze. So
Just to go back to the grip aspect of what we were talking about there, the fact that we don't have that solid ice base, and that's simply because there isn't the rising and falling going above and below the point of freezing, is there? So, you know, you need to go to sort of 2 or 3 degrees above, then you get that the thaw, and then that refreezes and packs hard into ice. We don't have that. So the big question was, would they ice the roads? Because from what you saw, Colt, and what I've spoken to all of the drivers, they all came away from their test with differing opinions, because some of the drivers tested on iced roads that have been watered with the big water bowser, which provide a fantastic base. So I asked Kai again, Clark at a course, you know, would they ice these roads? And he said, no, we won't, because the teams don't want the road icing. It provides a very different kind of grip, apparently.
Massive difference.
They're very confident that, because my concern was that they could damage the roads. And Kai said, no, you know, it is sufficiently cold that around the gravel of the road, there is an awful lot of moisture. And he said, you know, while we might pull out some bits of gravel, we won't get down to start damaging the roads, the sort of foundation of the road, if you like. So it is interesting that it will look, sorry to bang on a bit here, but it will look quite bad, because, you know, once the full field have gone through, you will get these tram lines of gravel coming through. But there will still
It won't even be the full field, David. On certainly on Ogier's test, I assumed, because we got there about 9:30 in the morning, and when I eventually got the chance to have a very quick word with him, I said, have you guys been here since 8 o'clock? It looks like you've done 7 or 8 runs from the state of the road, and as you say, the gravel that was appearing. And he said, no, we've only been up twice. So it really did come through with these with the World Rally Cars. It came through very, very quickly.
But it won't be a problem. You know, they would. No. And for sure, you know, the one thing that the Pirelli tyre does incredibly well is it'll retain its studs. You know, this vulcanization process that they've got of bonding the stud into the tyre. It is incredible. And, you know, they've got a 7mm protrusion, which will give them a absolute stack load of grip. I mean, George, you can tell us. What is it like to drive on those tyres?
Just unbelievable. Absolutely. It's like... In a two-wheel drive, it's like having four-wheel drive. The traction is so phenomenal.
And you had had the really narrow ones, George, as well. The 145s.
We had the narrows. Literally about 60, 65 millimetres across the tread. There would be a row of four or five spikes in that little area. They were just amazing.
But that's all he needed, though, wasn't it? Because it concentrates so much of the weight into those studs, doesn't it? That it just, the grip is quite phenomenal.
It is, and the way the car moves on that tyre allows a lot of movement. So what it does is it promotes the grip. So when the car gets a little bump or you make another input, whilst the car will appear to go very sideways, the car will go sideways on the tyre, but the tyre's quite soft. It doesn't occasion a quick breakaway, so the studs left in the road, it doesn't get dragged across. The tyre will flex, so the car will move above the tyre and letting the tyre grip and not break away, whereas the stiffer tyre, when you get that big input, it jerks the tyre, it breaks the traction, if you like. There's an element of that. I might be overplaying it a little bit, but it's kind of how it was described to me by tyre people many years ago.
It's also what it feels like. It's also an issue, though, isn't it? That if there is quite a lot of fresh snow on the surface, then the tire, the stud isn't going to bite down into anything, really.
You're better off with gravel. I mean, gravel will give you grip, but it's very very hard on the studs. But as we know, that the Pirelli won't lose its studs, but they get banged about and broken, and they start to flex within the tire, but they'll stay in it. So you'll always get traction, just won't be premium.
Is there any kind of compound grip in the tyre, George, or not at all?
The tyre's primarily designed, in the past at least, to hold the stud and to keep the stud rigid in the tyre. Mm. So it's quite a hard compound. You're not looking for anything more than that. The stud must be, I would have guessed, 95% of the grip.
Mm. Yeah. Wow.
Literally, because the rubber's never on the road. If it's ice, the rubber's never on the road.
Yeah.
Obviously the tread's very open and it's just square knobbles on the tire, like a trials bike tire, almost a little bit more open than that. And it's designed to clear the snow. Obviously, if it's spinning up above the snow and not got down to the ice, it will spin up and it'll clear. I mean, it'll be very, very effective at clearing it.
Yeah.
But George, can I ask you a technical question about that?
Compound to get grip on ice or snow, no. Not that tyre, no.
Can I ask a technical question about that? Yes. Seeing as the drivers like to heat cycle when they're obviously on tarmac and driving not on snow and stuff like that. How do they warm up the tyres?
You don't.
They try and keep them as cold as possible.
Well, you used to try and keep them as cold as possible. So when you were running on these studded tyres and you were driving down a road section, you drove it on the edge of the road. You tried to keep them on the snow and the ice, partly to stop them wearing away and lose studs and just break them and get them loose, but also to keep the tyres cold. And all the tyres on the service vehicles were always kept on the roof. So minus 20. And the tyres were put onto the car lovely and stiff and the studs would stay in it. But that technology has been superseded now by obviously the Pirelli mastered this, vulcanising the studs in, where it's much better.
There used to be two lengths of stud as well, didn't there? I remember when I started, you always had the narrower tyre, but you could have an ice stud.
That was more in Monte Carlo. But you got ice studs and snow studs for snow tires for Sweden as well, depending on the year you did. But they were always based on the narrow tire. You did get shorter studs. So if it's really, really quick ice, maybe you want a shorter stud. I don't know, for more stability. Maybe that worked. To be honest, I'm not familiar with the mechanisms that would be at work there, so I'm not going to try and do an expert comment on something that I really don't know enough about there, that detail. But yes, there was a difference.
Do you know what I think is going to be interesting, and I might have mentioned this in one of our previous podcasts, is that Hyundai and Toyota tested on two very different sorts of roads. The road that Hyundai tested on was more or less an ice base because it had been watered. The roads that Toyota tested on were just as we might expect in the rally. They hadn't been watered. They'd just been, they developed naturally, if you like. I think that could make quite a big difference in terms of, I think the drivers will very, very quickly determine what the road surface is like and they will adapt. But what we certainly saw in the test was drivers making mistakes, a number of drivers having offs. So it could be quite an interesting opening stage, couldn't it? You know, while drivers find where that level of grip is, how far they can push it.
Colin, from what you're saying, is that, you know, we've seen it in the past where people have done, you know, extensive pre-event tests, blah, 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 blah. They come out on the first stage. We've seen it many times with Thierry Neuville, particularly, who comes out and says, oh, this, you know, the car is set up completely wrong, our test road wasn't right, et cetera, et cetera. You know, not singling out Thierry. Many drivers have said that to us in the past. Thierry's very, very good at solving those problems. That's where he's the master. He'll come out with a car that's an absolute pig of a thing to drive, and by lunchtime on the first day, he's fastest car in the rally, you know, or after lunch, should I say. He's brilliant at doing that. But that will, as you say, first stage, it's going to be a teller. If we've got two major teams that have tested in entirely different roads on entirely different surfaces, and the rally is not icing the roads, that could be very key. It depends on how much latitude there is in the car setup, how finely tuned it is. Normally,
you know what? I think this, for me, it's why I'm getting so excited about this rally. There are so many factors playing into it. There are so many unpredictable factors, almost unknowns. It's unusual, isn't it, to go to any event these days and have that amount of uncertainty. You know, drivers who don't know the roads, we're not sure about the conditions, we're not sure necessarily how the aero is going to work, how the engine's going to work.
Colin, I think we can be sure on a lot of that. The aero will work tremendously well. The engine will work better than ever in those cooler conditions.
And the aero will work. Yeah. The aero will work better than ever, we're told.
Do you remember the Austin Metros when they went to Sweden for the first time? They had these fabulous deep spoilers.
Scoop
the snow over the top of the car.
Yeah.
And you remember the mistake that ProDrive made with one of the additions, I say a mistake, the design feature of the car.
It's Finland.
Where they got the dust coming up through the cooling package. It's fantastically efficient cooling package for a race car. Just didn't work on a rally car that was driving on a gravel road.
Mini. They did it with the Mini as well. Remember the Mini in Finland, David?
Did they make a mistake with the Mini in Finland, on the second passes. There's great photographs of the Subaru just sucking in dust and blowing straight out in the windscreen, rendering the driver completely and absolutely blind.
Wow.
But it is fair to say, though, that the grip, the consistency of the grip, okay, the road could evolve with more snow or what have you, but the grip should be there. You know, we should have good... Yes. When you look at what we had last year in Sweden, and I don't want this to turn into a sort of Sweden bashing at all, but it was just, I mean, it was so random, wasn't it? When you went from corner to corner, you didn't know if you were going to have deep mud, deep ruts, solid ice, a bit of snow, rain. You know, it was all over the place. But here...
Who was it that had that incredible spin on the shakedown last year in Sweden?
Teemu Suninen.
Teemu, yeah, my goodness. That was... It was a 2 360s, I think, 720s.
It was, down, yeah, it was a monster. It was
pretty special. It looked like sixth gear.
Yeah, that knocked him for the whole rally. But David, when I talk about inconsistencies and unknowns with downforce, with aero... What we're led to believe is that if we get really cold temperatures, there is a greater aerodynamic effect, which potentially, you know, it's how far do you push it? How much do you trust that? How much do you trust? Okay, someone's telling me it's minus 25 degrees. That means I've got an extra 10 or 15% downforce. Am I willing to keep my foot in on that corner where normally I would lift?
It's all to do with feel, Colin. The drivers get the feel. They can feel it straight away. I mean, all these top drivers just have this innate ability to just understand what the car is giving to them.
Yeah.
And they, some can feel it out more quickly than others. But you know, obviously, I think the Ott Tanaks and the Sebastian Ogiers with their experience, they're able to get right there straight away. The other guys aren't far behind at all.
But also, George, it does show that, you know, you need that feedback from the car and the confidence in the car. Because remember Chris Meek, you know, a few years ago with that awful Citroen, clearly, you know, it had the aero and it had the right parts on it, but there was no confidence in the car at all, was there? And it just, you know, it just didn't work.
But I think it was very disappointing for Citroen, that was.
You're dead right, though, George, that it is the feel. And it's about the drivers that are going to find that feeling quickest. And, you know, for me, Ogier is a brilliant, brilliant driver, but he's never been at his absolute best in Sweden. Although that's usually when we get the really rutted roads And he's not a driver that likes the car moving around a lot in the ruts.
It is horrible. I've driven down those rutted roads when they were literally like chariot tracks. You know, they were they must have been, you know, 250 millimeters deep. The car is just scraping the entire time. You're on these nice narrow tires, and you're getting kicked around. You're going down. It's genuinely like being on a little train track, and you're turning into these incredibly fast corners. And the car's banging around, literally like a toboggan track, but just with the wheels. It's just horrendous feeling, but you just got to go for it. And you commit and you do it, and you don't lift. So you get a huge amount of mechanical grip from that.
Ogier's problem in Sweden for many years was, you know, he tended to be opening the road on the opening day.
So that
was an issue. That was an issue. But then the bigger issue was the second pass, because between the first and second passes, they had the classic rally. The classics were all running on those narrow, narrow tyres that you keep talking about and reminding us of, George.
Destroying the road,
And they created completely different lines with different ruts, with deep ruts, that Ogier then, first on the road on the second pass, had to deal with again. And David, you're so right. He never seemed happy in Sweden. He never seemed happy. And, you know, you look back and you think he was justifiably not happy with some of it. But also,
he's a different man. He is a different man. And he's at a different stage in his career. You know, you look at, for me, the guy who we have to almost make favourite for this event, which is, it's quite a remarkable thing to say, is Calle Rovanpera, because he has great experience of driving that car in the snow. He's done a lot of testing. And, you know, he has an innate understanding of driving in the snow and understanding how the snow can give you different grip and different conditions and blah, blah, blah. But beyond all of that, you know, he's a 20-year-old that will just fire the thing down the road, you know, without too much concern. Whereas, you know, Ogier is at the tail end of his career. And we see this quite regularly in Finland. By a driver's own admission, you know, they're not quite so willing to take the big risks as they were right at the top of their time. And for me, that's another reason why we've got to look to Calle as one of the absolute favourites.
Won the Rally Lapland last year, of course, in January, wasn't it?
He did.
He did.
And this is the other thing as well, that he won that rally with some stage times, average speeds that were up in 140 kilometres an hour. You know, so
141 kilometres an hour, one of his average speeds.
Yeah, so we could have the youngest ever winner of a WRC round by 2.5 years from Jari Matti Latvala, but also we could have potentially the fastest ever round of a WRC to beat Meek in 16 in Finland when he averaged 126.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. And I think you're absolutely bang on to highlight Rovanpera's chances, David, because you know, clearly everything, totally agree with everything you say, but he's also got potentially a really, really good starting position.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to Christian Solberg, and you can hear that podcast, I'm sure you may have already heard it. And we talked, Christian Solberg's done that rally 8 times, he's won it in the past as well. And I asked him, you know, if you could choose, where would you start? He said fourth or fifth on the road. So, you know, I mean, it's difficult. It's difficult to tell because there are these factors with the dust and all the rest. But he reckons fourth or fifth on the road. Where is Rovanpera? Fourth on the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I think Rovanpera is absolutely, has to be one of the favourites.
Can I chuck in the fact of driving in reduced light as well? Because we are obviously on the Arctic Circle. So daylight is, the sun's not high in the sky. It's not going to be brilliant sunshine, and there is something about understanding the way that light hits snow. As a skier, I know, because I don't know how it does, and I fall over a lot because being able to read whether it's a bump in the road or just a shadow or stuff like that will affect how fast you go.
It will, and there's no doubt.
They'll just be going flat out. They haven't got time to judge that, Lisa. Sorry, it's not like skiing.
But I think that's a reasonable point, especially if it's
a flat light, everything becomes the same, and you can't necessarily. I mean, I've driven in a whiteout before, and it is when you can't see anything because everything is white. You really have to. I mean, he'll be trusting his co-driver's notes anyway, but the low level of light could create I mean, the moon's going to be up. I was just having a little look on the website. The moon's going to be up all day during the rally. And it's going to be one of those that's going to have unexpected elements chucked into it. And the light element. Do you remember when Thierry Neuville went through a phase of wearing different coloured glasses for different... Oh, no, it was Yari Massi, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they'll all have them.
Glasses least, for different... Yeah.
Contrast
different
glasses.
Conditions,
just contrast glasses, yeah.
And it was Pentirikola was one that started that. Do you remember that, George?
Back, yes, I do very, very clearly. Yeah.
It was in the fog on the RAC. But, you know, regularly we'll see Ogier wearing them. And, you know, he's a guy that knows more than anybody really about skiing. You know, 2 years as a ski instructor, he would understand the best way to see in the snow.
Contrast glasses definitely make a difference, and it will ultimately help. But it's not like skiing, because I mean, like 90% of the commitment coming into the corners is on the note.
Obviously, it's not like skiing. But I mean is that the actual not snow blindness, but being able to understand what you're actually seeing ahead of you is very different in those kind of light conditions.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as you alluded to the whiteout, that brings us back to the first point, the point that Colin made about, you know, what will Ogier's saving grace be? So you imagine there's low light and there's a little bit of snow dust in the air. Mm. That's all. It doesn't matter what you're wearing for glasses. You're basically driving into a blanket.
A wall. A wall of
not,
white.
Not quite. There'll be some visibility, but very little. That will be a factor, and that I think that could very much swing into Seb's favour or a saving grace for him.
George, what Christian said.
Balance. Yeah.
What Christian said was, you know, with this snow dust, is you can go for, you know, 4 or 5 kilometres, there's nothing. All of a sudden, you come around the corner, and he described it as a wall. Yep. He said, it's just there, and you have to absolutely trust your notes.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're going to lose bucket loads of time. If you lift off every time you hit this, and it might only be for 50 or 60 metres, apparently, and then it clears again, and that's you're off. Right, you're off again. Mm. So,
do they get the same cold fear that all of the rest of us get when you go into driving conditions like that? That whole moment of, do I brake? Do I keep going? I mean, the normal people, we have that cold fear, and your palms go hot and cold at the same time. And
The likes of Ogier and Tanak, and any driver that's got that have their moxie about them, just see opportunity. This is going to screw everyone else up. Look at Richard Burns in the fog. He just saw fog. Him and Robert Reed just saw opportunity. Thank you very much. Let's pass a few of our WRC rivals in the stage, catching 1 and 2 minutes on a driver in the stage, and then they can't even follow your tail lights. You know, how cool is that?
I asked a little bit about this before Monty, Lise, about, you know, that feeling of when we're driving down a road and, you know, you touch some black ice and you feel the car go from under you. And I said, that it makes our tummies turn. When that sort of thing happens, it is genuinely terrifying. And I said to some of the drivers, you know, do you get that feeling when you're on the wrong tyre and you go into that first corner? And they said, no, we're too busy trying to sort it out. You know, you don't have time to think about it. But just to come back to the light issue, the second run of that 31K stage, which is 18 miles, it's 18:38 and sunset is 17:15. So that will be full dark.
No. Here's the thing, guys. Here's the thing out there, is that there's a very long dusk and a very long dusk. And as we all know, that dusk period is the worst period to be driving in. You either want light or you want full dark. Yeah. That horrible in-between period, and we all know it from driving on the roads, where things are all just very, very indiscernible in that dusk period before the lights are working properly. Mm. So will it be full dark? What time did you say it goes? It's the sun sets, David?
Sunset's 17:15 and the stage is 18:38.
I don't think it will be. But I think the first one or two, it could be a little tricky.
No, the twilight and pre-light dawn, very, very long, can be hours.
When do you go full lights? You know,
you go
that
full
weird
lights
time
in Britain. In Britain, you'll go full lights within, like say at this time of year when you see what is officially nightfall. your lights will be on 100%. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. No, no one will go into that stage without lights full on.
But what I mean is, it's that moment where that time where you change and you think, well, actually, I can see better without them at the minute. And then you have to kind of adjust, don't you, to switch them on, and you're seeing the wrong things for a while until you. Yeah.
But I noticed that the organisers have set the final stage of Friday and Saturday as both stages start at 18:38. So I do think they probably know it's going to be dark.
Properly dark. Probably, same for everybody. No advantage.
Yeah, that would make sense.
That's the key. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, all the drivers can employ. They can all employ their tentacles of perception.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I was just wondering, when you were talking about the tyre studs and describing how the tyres moved, I was thinking they're acting like suckers on your tentacles of perception. Yeah. They're like little suckers holding you, but not falling off.
Suckers.
Like little suckers. It was suckers that you said, Lisa.
Suckers.
Do you want to hear an interesting fact about the first stage on Saturday? Mustalampe. It goes across a swamp. And there isn't a road across a swamp. It is just a frozen swamp.
It's an ice road.
Yes. I saw that.
So that will be icy, but then it depends on how much snow. If there's been meters of snow, that just compacts down a little bit, but it stays relatively soft because as you've all pointed out, it never gets above freezing once it starts. So it's interesting.
Interesting. We've discussed clearly the conditions and the challenges. What about our who's going to win, basically? What about...
I already told you that.
Go well? No, you've not. You've said Rovan Perra, but there's lots of others that you have to consider. You have to consider Craig Breen. You know, his starting position could be magnificent. It could be terrible.
What Tanak's start position must be amazing.
Tanak's start position is remarkably good. Oliver Solberg, what can he do? Taka-san, Takamoto Katsuta, what can he do? Can he get a top four or five?
Again, really good experience, isn't he, Taka?
Great experience. And I tell you what, you all have to do, if you haven't seen it already, watch the onboard that he's posted today from one of his tests. It is just quite stunning, quite stunning, quite violent. And you know, when you watch these cars on a winter rally, so be it Rally Sweden or the Arctic Rally, you watch from the side of the road or you watch the TV coverage, and it almost looks balletic at times, doesn't it?
Yes,
you know,
it
the
is.
Kind of the control. Yeah. And you watch the onboard and you see how violent it is. How violent it is. And it looks the whole time as if he is absolutely on the edge. On the edge. And your big jumps, big bumps, big hits, all sorts going on in that car. And I'm thinking, how would you kind of compute that with what you see at the side of the road, which looks beautifully smooth and balletic? It's well worth watching, well, if you haven't seen it already.
But in terms of a setup, George, they're going to go there with, if we looked at, say, Rally GB sort of setup, would it be similar to a Rally GB, or would it be more of a Rally Finland sort of setup? Or
No, I think it would be more like a actually, I'm not the cars are so soft now anyway. All these cars are running with springs. Even on any gravel rally, they're running on springs that are about half the strength of your road car, nominally, possibly even less. So it's all to do with the damper setups. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to promote. The car normally has to go a little bit higher, but say normally, these days with aero, they shy away from that and they put the car as low as possible. So I'm not quite sure how that particular feature will work with the snow. I would have thought you'd have to go a little bit higher. But when we say a little bit higher, I'm thinking, you know, go 40, 50 mil higher. They'll go higher and they'll do five. Oh, yeah, we've gone really high. We're 5 millimetres higher. I can't even imagine you'd hardly notice the difference. But this is what when you speak to the likes of Tom Fowler, he's fabulous. He'll tell you this dead straight, dead serious. He says, yeah, we're going really high. We're 5 mils up on this rally, George. What? And you think that's a lot? Yeah, it's massive. So since my day, that a lot of those things have changed. You want to keep the grip. You're like every event, I think the cars are very soft on snow. I had my cars always soft for the snow. Although it's nice and consistent and as balletic as Colin says, you are trying to find traction. Soft suspension leads to traction. Compliance lets your tyres work. So, yeah, the cars will be as soft as possible. If there's not a lot of bumps and not a lot of hits, that's a factor in it.
Just to jump in there, George, is that to do with the weight transfer as well? Why does a soft car give you much better traction in
because
in
every time you hit a bump and you have hard suspension, the whole car's body will get pushed up, and then that will drag the tire up, and you lose traction. And it's a very, very simple equation. And you know, you imagine that the wheel travel in these cars, 350 millimeters of suspension travel, I believe some of these cars have now. It's enormous. Mm. All of it geared around keeping that. Those are the incredible dynamics and those fabulous shock absorbers, and those that it's just beyond belief fabulous. I would love to go and have a good long chat with one of the engineers and get a better picture of it. Maybe if
but
you
it's,
guys
it's all
to
about
rally
keeping,
again sometime, I'll manage that.
It's just about keeping the wheel on the road.
Keeping that tire, keeping that tire consistently on the ground, giving you traction, driving you forward. It's all about that. And you can't believe it. You know, you watch a car leaving a service park when it's coming out from the gravel, maybe up onto an asphalt road really, really slowly. And you might watch a Land Rover or a Land Cruiser or a Mercedes car coming out in front of them because it'll be a common exit. And then the cars are bumping around and even the Land Rovers are lifting a wee wheel and spinning. And the rally car comes out and the body doesn't move. The wheels do all the travel. The dynamics of the car is amazing. So, yes, they are very soft. How much change is made from one event to the other? I suspect it's relatively small in terms of what the whole package generally does. But, yes, there will be changes. And you've just got to balance that against what the terrain is doing to the car. But your whole purpose is to get that car smoothly running with that wheel always on the ground.
But when we've talked earlier about that first stage, which is probably going to be one of the quickest stages of the event, you know, really nice wide road, double width road, you don't really want you'd want a slightly stiffer car there to give you a bit more precision in the high speed.
I would agree with you, but the reality is always different. They will be extra soft because the car won't be taking the hits and they've got the latitude. They're not necessarily nice to drive. I mean, it's maybe not the most beautiful driving experience. It will be for those guys because they're used to it and, you know, they're all about getting out to the limit. But, a stiff car will be more fun to drive because it's more reactive. These cars, they'll make a steering input and it'll be very, very lazy. And you do hear them talking about it. Oh, I couldn't get the feeling from the car. Well, you know, the feeling from the car that they're missing, actually that car is 99% perfect, but they need that last 1%.
Yeah.
You know, so they will want it soft and it can be very hard to drive. And I can recall Tommy Mackinnon setting up customer cars and the customers, it was a lovely fast car. It's undeniably a ridiculously quick car that his customers, some of them could drive it and they loved it. A lot of the drivers couldn't, especially the gentleman drivers or the lady drivers that weren't necessarily, you know, out for competition. They were out for fun. Driving Tommy Mackinnon's setup is no fun to drive at all because it's all about traction and getting the car to go quick. It's not about how much fun it is to drive.
But there is also an additional part of that equation that you want the car to feed confidence back to you, and a softer, progressive car would give you that bit more confidence.
Well, the grip gives you the confidence. And the drivers will look past the fact that the steering is a bit lazy. I mean, I'm sure they could make the car a lot nicer to drive, but it wouldn't be as quick.
Yeah.
So that they know that the car will grip. So it's a psychological thing. Yep, this car is set up; it will grip. They're turning into every corner on cognizance and the fact that the car is giving them the grip. So ultimately, a whole car package, all the speed, all the power, all that fabulous suspension, comes down to how well that tire is gripping on the ground and actually turning the car in physically. If they feel the car starting to push out, yeah, that confidence can go and it can be very hard to bring it back because there's not much feeling there. It's all to do with trust. But that's why they go away at lunchtime, make a whole load of tiny wee changes to the car, which turns the whole thing around. The driver comes back out knowing that the engineers have made a difference, turns into the first few corners, this is right now. And away they go. They lean back in on their knowledge, their ability to say this car is going to turn. Whilst the feeling of it is, of course, is important, but also they're trusting massively on their innate knowledge that the car has been designed and given to them by the engineers. It will do this. We've been to the tests. We know it will work.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Compliance is everything. So soft, soft, soft. These cars are as soft can be.
We are kind of heading towards the end of the time that we allocated for this, but I do have one more thing that I wanted to ask. We know that the crews are going to have to carry survival kits with them because it's going to be cold. We have no fans being encouraged onto this rally. There's going to be some really lonely parts of this event to get your car broken and be waiting for someone to pick you up.
Okay. Do you want to start crying for them or something?
No, I just think it's kind of adding. There's a really scary drama about to start on BBC called The Terror about being out in the snow on your own. But I just think that just adds to the whole excitement of this event.
Yeah. I think it does. And I think on a practical basis, at least, what it does mean with having no fans is, you know, if you plow into a snowbank, there's no one to help you. You know, you'll be digging it out yourself and...
I think you'll be finished at that, Colin.
Correct. Right. That's what I was going to say, George. Yeah. If you're lucky, you'll dig it out. The chances are that you won't dig it out. So, you know, in the past, we've seen that, okay, drivers losing a minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes. The fans descend on the car and they push it out, they lift it out quite often. But that's not going to happen in Rovaniemi next week. And, you know, I suppose it won't be a consideration because no driver ever plans to go into a snowbank.
No.
But, you know, if it does happen, well... it could be far more telling than it would normally be.
I remember
snowbanks that gives way underneath instead of
these are going to be solid ones. I think
they're proper ones.
Yeah, but I remember you
hit a snowbank. You hit a snowbank at any speed, and you plow the front end into it. Okay, if you're going around the corner, it may ping off. But there were a couple of incidences when we were on the tests where you went well in. You were the front of the car, the front axle was deep in snow and had to be the car had to be pulled out. So even although they're solid, you hit it the wrong way, you come into a corner too fast, and you have to go straight on. You're in trouble. You're in big, big trouble.
I remember Thomas Rodstrom. I think he maybe had Denny Girardet in the car with him at that point. On a rally, it was a Toyota. I think it was Denny and Thomas. They went off absolutely flat in sixth gear over a series of crests. They just they jumped on one of the crests, didn't expect to, and the car just dived straight off the road. And Denny absolutely thought he was going to die. And the car just went into the snow and it stopped in two car lengths. They got dug out. I don't think they got dug out straight away. The car was fairly deep in. There wasn't any damage on the car. There wasn't even a broken grill. The spoiler on the front wasn't even broken. So 100 and maybe 180, 190, maybe 200 kph to zero in two car lengths.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, we're talking 10, 12 metres. Wow. Then he said it was incredible. He said it was a total non-event.
Driving into an airbag, aren't you?
But basically, fabulous. But you could be unlucky, there could be a rock in there. You know, that'd be a different story. A rock or even a
tree stump. There are lots and lots of tree stumps. We saw Sheikh Khaled doing that in Sweden a few years ago, hitting a massive tree stump that was hidden. But I don't know if any of you saw the rally in Estonia at the weekend that obviously the two Hyundais were involved in. Did you see what Gryazin did to his car? George, you know what it's like at stage ends on Rally Sweden? You rarely see big damage, rarely. Because of what we've just talked about.
Yes.
You know, the snow acts as an airbag and you don't get too much damage. Gryazin's car, Gryazin's VW Polo, was turned into a VW Up. He absolutely destroyed it. Did you see that?
He was
backwards, he was forwards, he was arse over tit. He was all, can I say that? Beep that, maybe Lise. He was end over end. He was end over
base
end.
Base over apex.
I looked at him and went, how did you do that on a snow rally? And then I saw some very grainy footage of it. And it was a bit like the accident you've just described, George. But he went down the road. He went down the road rolling.
Another issue as well that we haven't discussed, which is a real risk in when there's fresh snow falling and settling on the road. Do you remember when Gwyndaf did Sweden in the Q8 Sierra Cosworth and he rolled? And if you lose the screen in the roll and you carry on down the road, obviously it just shovels all of the snow. And it's actually quite seriously. So you essentially, if you've got a bit of speed on.
You get packed in.
Yeah, totally. And then you are essentially in an avalanche. So that's one thing. But just on another note, I remember when I first went to this event a lot of years ago, and it was the The peak was minus 38. That was the coldest that we had on one evening. And you were talking there about the survival kits, that they've got these survival suits and stuff like that, and shovels and what have you. We went to the driver's briefing for that event when it was so cold, and they were given a list of which parts of the car to burn first. Seriously, Cole. Seriously, they were told, and the seats. The seats. Surely, the seats wouldn't have been. They're not great seats if they're flammable. But yeah, there were. And whichever bits you could take off the car to burn, and what wow. to burn in those circumstances, it is. You know, it's an extreme event, and that's yeah. why you know we've got to be so glad that we're going there, because you know for years we've yeah. wanted this proper kind of winter rally, and we've got it. And you know, hopefully, when we go back to Sweden next year, which we will, because Rally Sweden has a contract with WRC promoter, you know, we will not go back to Torsby. Yves Maton has been very clear. Jean Todd was very clear about that last year as well. We can't and we won't. And if Torsby is what the Swedes offer next year, it won't happen.
I don't think that's entirely correct. We could go to Torsby, but we will have longer road sections.
Yeah, we won't have stages around. But I don't, you know, Maton told me categorically, Colt, we will not be back to Torsby. We
really?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. He said we won't. Wow. And I think that story should be up on the site now, you know, because...
Is that not problematical for the rally? Because their main sponsor is the farmland.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem with going north is that you move away from the population centres, yep. and your ticket sales plummet.
Yep.
So they have to find a way of including the Norway stages, because they're pretty profitable for them.
But
and pretty much snow, not guaranteed, but the snow on the Norway, on the border stages, has always
higher.
Been decent.
You're higher up, Colin. You have altitude.
Exactly.
But also, you know,
if it's an organisation, you haven't found a way to include people in a COVID era, then you're doing something wrong. There needs to be a lot of movement forward on bringing people closer to the event when they can't get to the event.
There does, Lise, but this, you know, for Sweden, it's the perfect storm that if they have to go north, yeah. they look to somewhere like Åre or somewhere where we've all been testing up there. And simply, people don't want the rally because it's a ski area and the accommodation's incredibly expensive, and it's also full in February.
They don't need it.
No.
They don't need the rally, David.
No.
They don't need it, as you say, because people are heading up to that part of the world anyway,
yeah.
you know, for their winter holidays.
Anyway, that's not the option.
One last point about that is it's an absolute... You know, for me, it's a big red flashing warning light for rallies like GB who have fallen off the calendar and who are going to try and get back on the calendar. It ain't going to be easy because, you know, the rallies that are coming in, as we saw last year with Monza, as we'll see this year with Ypres, as no doubt we will see with Rovaniemi, the rallies that are coming in are fantastic quality, entertaining events. If you lose your spot on that WRC calendar, be prepared to fight bloody hard to get it back again.
But in fairness to Sweden, they haven't lost their slot. You know, they've been the first victims this year of coronavirus, haven't they? You know, it was because of the rising numbers. But you're dead right, Cole. And this is why I feel a significant degree of sympathy for Glenn Olsen and his team this week, because
Absolutely.
Or next week. Because, you know, they've run an event. Yes, it's been hit by the weather, but you go back to 18 and we had great snow and everybody forgot for another year that, you know, we have these difficult winters. But suddenly, you know, they're confronted by this great event in Finland, which has, it's going to tick every box that a WRC promoter and the FIA want. And, you know, yeah. it is going to be incredibly hard for Glenn and the team to come back from this, but they've got another year to put a plan into place.
To be honest, there is one slight minus. Now, all my Finnish friends might hate me for saying this, but this is not meant to say that the event is not fabulous, because I'd love to see two winter, maybe even three winter rallies in the calendar. The one thing that goes against this Finnish classic is it could actually be too cold. I mean, you know, at what point is it too cold? You know, minus 35, minus 40 is the same as when you get to plus 40 in the opposite extreme. You know, it's massively difficult to survive.
Is that not the WRC's DNA, though, George? Is that
not? Well, I think it is. Well, my feeling would be that, but I'm just wondering. I just wonder that actually we can manage. And I mean, it would be brilliant. Then the teams that have got the good heated front windscreens, that have got their heating system sorted out, you'll be getting some cars that, you know, they get a hole in the floor from a stone or something stupid happens, and You get some snow in the car. You don't clean your boots off properly. Mm. The car will steam up inside. Yeah, you'll have a miserable stage. I think these are great tests, and it's all part of the DNA of rallying.
Josh Donaldson, who's going to win?
Me, if I was doing it, obviously, because I love snow so much. I think, can I say three different drivers?
No.
No.
I hate you all. I'm going to put my money on a rank outsider here, and it's going to be young Mr. Evans. I think he's going to do magically. He did awful well, awful well last year, and I think I think we're going to see him do the marvellous again. I'd love that.
I'm going to go with Oik Ten Hag. I think that good place to start on the road. I he was quick in Sweden last year. You know, he finished second, I think. You know, and he would have struggled because, you know, he'd come off the back of that huge shunt in Monte. But the speed, we could see the speed was coming and coming. But having said that, you know, Sweden last year bore little resemblance to Finland this year. But just before I sign off, Lise, I would just like to say that there is a sensational entry for this. Not in terms of numbers, I think there's only 55, 56 cars.
56, yeah.
But we've got more World Rally cars than we've had since, I think, start of the season in 2017. We have got 10 drivers fighting for WRC2, of course, with Andreas Mikkelsen and Esa-Pekka Lappi coming back. And we have 23 drivers in WRC3. So it is, you know, it's fascinating. All the way down the entry list, there's plenty. You know, there's Johan Kristoffersen and Mattias Ekström, World Rallycross and DTM drivers coming back. There's heaps of stuff to get excited about. And watch.
If Rally Radio had still been on, Colin would have been getting full value from his boots.
Which would have been.
who are you going to tip, Cole?
Craig Breen. Craig Breen for me, you know, did an unbelievable job in Estonia. Everyone said, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him. How can he get into the car on a fast rally, having been out of it for 6 months, and perform? Well, he did.
How, I think he'll do exactly Colin, how can he? Here. How can he get into a car on a fast rally and perform after being out of the car for 6 months?
he can. That's for sure. And he's the one that's demonstrated it. So I think Breen will win. I'm going to tell you who's going to win R5 as well. Because I get, you know, WRC2, WRC3. I want to know the quickest R5 or Rally 2 car, whichever we're calling them these days. Do you know what? I think that'll be a surprise. I think Emil Lindholm will shock us all there and will win that.
What about Jari Huttunen?
Jari Huttunen has got every chance. Yep. Has got every chance. You know, for me, that is the most open of the, clearly the categories. WRC2, WRC3, fastest of the R5 cars. There are a dozen drivers, genuinely. More than that, there are maybe 14 or 15 drivers who could win that class. But I think Emil Lindholm is going to surprise a lot of us, and he will be the one to beat in that class.
Well,
and
I was persuaded into Kalle Rovanperä. By you, David. Yep. So that's who I'm going for. We could keep going. We could keep going, but we are ticking out of time here as I keep kind of trying to remind you. So, it's going to be exciting. Subscribe now if you're not subscribing already to the podcast, Spin the Rally Pod. Thank you, George Donaldson. Thank you, David Evans. Thank you, Colin Clark. If you do want to get in touch as well, best place, send us a tweet or hashtag us a tweet. Tweet us. Tweet? Is that what we do? We do that.
Yeah. At Dark Fish Rally.
Well done, Colin.
Some tweet more than others, Lee.
They do. They very do.
What are you trying to say, David Evans? What are you trying to say? What are you trying to say?
That cap fits very well.
It does. Lisa, thank you.
Thank you.
You
so lovely.
Thank you, Lise.
Cheers, guys. Catch you later.
Bye, guys.
Bye.